Welcome to Finding Your Voice. I am your host, Per Bristow. I'm the creator of The Sing With Freedom, The Singing Zone, Speak With Freedom, Perform With Freedom, Peak Performance Mastery Training Programs, and other goodies. And here we are going to go deep into areas of voice, expression, communication, performance, releasing fears. Who are we really? How can we release what we are truly capable of in life? Get ready for some powerful conversations with some really fascinating people from all around the world. Hello, hello. So this is going to be so much fun because I am here today with Paul Shortino. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Pierre. How are you? It's an honor to be here with you today.
It is so cool. Now, for some people, as a matter of fact, a lot of people in the world, you're a legend in the world of vocals.
Of heavy rock, yeah.
Of heavy rock, right? And so I'll introduce you a little bit, and then we're going to dig into your life and how you have been able to do what you love to do for such a long time. And that's what I think is so fascinating and so inspiring, frankly. So first of all, right now, you are doing Raiding the Rock Vault in Vegas, an amazing, wonderful show.
Well, actually, it's a history of the classic rock from 1960. It opens up with My Generation and then it ends with Jump. And in between there, you've got the Stones, the Doors, Queen, Led Zeppelin, Free, Aerosmith, Robert Palmer, ZZ Top, Whitesnake. And we have some of the members from those bands that are performing this show. And it's been number one for now, it's going on 7 years.
Seven years. It's amazing. And that is so cool because you, who are in the show, actually were in the bands that play this stuff.
So, right.
And you were in Quite Right, Rough Cut, perhaps.
Another band called King Cobra with Carmine Appice. Yeah. I also did a couple records with a blues guitarist out of Spain called Javier Vargas. And I did a record with Carmine and also the bass player that was in Vanilla Fudge, Bogart. Mm-hmm. So it was, it was Bogart Appice and Beck Bogart in Appice. Yeah. So it was Jeff Beck, Tim Bogart, and Carmine Appice. So this guitar player wanted to do a record and it was on Warner Brothers in Spain and wanted to do a record with Carmine. And I was at that time doing stuff with Carmine, and we were doing another King Cobra record that they were on Capitol. Right. And so I had replaced the singer. So I did two albums with Carmine, King Cobra, but we did a couple records and did a remake of Sexy. It's on YouTube, the Rod Stewart song, because Carmine co-wrote that with Rod Stewart. So we did a version more, not disco-y, but more rockish. And doing whoa, keep a rocking them beats, keep a rocking them beats, you know. But anyways, I did a couple records with him, actually three records with him, and toured with him, which I love the blues. Yeah. So I love all aspects of music. I very seldom listen to rock music because I'm playing it all the time.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So I like to listen to other stuff and kind of vamp out to other things.
Yeah.
So that people go, wow, you can sing At Last, or you can sing I Want to Be Around, some Tony Bennett or some Sinatra. Yeah. You know, and that's like, I grew up listening to that stuff because my mother was a singer.
So this is also what I think is interesting, because often we see, we hear someone who's a great singer and we think they're only great at one thing, but the truth is that you've been involved with so many different styles of music. You sing so many different styles, and I want to get into how you got started in the first place. We should also mention that you, of course, were in the big
What do we call it?
It's hearing aid. You mean hearing aid? The stars thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Because everybody knows about We Are the World, right? That was this big thing for Africa and with all the celebrities. And then you also did the version with the heavy rock, the rock singers, which was an amazing song.
Right. We had Vince Neil on there. And then all the singers was myself, Dave Medichetti from YNT. Eric Bloom from Blue Oyster Cult, also Rob Halford from Judas Priest. He had Ronnie James Dio singing as well. Kevin DeBrow from Quiet Riot, who I replaced. Jeff Tate from Queensryche. Don Dokken. These were the singers in this. And then there was Frankie Benelli on drums, Vinny Appice on drums, Carmine's brother. And then you had Vivian Campbell, who's in Def Leppard now, who wrote the song with Jimmy Bain, who was in Dio. And then you had every guitar player from Neil Sean to, George Lynch and everybody in between there. And the two guitar players from Iron Maiden. And it was just quite an ensemble. Here I'm just get signed to Warner Brothers. We're just put out a first album, and I'm here with all of these rock stars that I'm tripping on and going, wow, I can't believe I'm in the same place with all these people. I've been on the other side of the fence where I'm a fan. So here I am a fan, and I'm one of the mains. I get to be one of the main singers in this ensemble of great people. And I also, after that, later, we did a thing for homeless people with Dennis Weaver and who played McLeod, and Valerie Harper. She just passed away last year. Mm-hmm. And Little Richard was one of the singers, Rita Coolidge, and Jennifer. I'm trying to think of her name. Jennifer Holliday was one of the singers, big voice. Amazing bunch of people. And I show up in chaps, with a G-string. And Little Richard said to me, well, I hope we raise enough money to get this boy some britches. But that was such an another amazing gathering of people, yeah. But a different genre, You got Rita Coolidge, your love is lifting me higher, but the song was just really dripping. They all would go, how do you get your voice to sound like that? I said, I don't know, it just comes out, I've tried the acting. I was in Spinal Tap. I did a few things on the TV series Fame, and acting just isn't my thing, as much as I get in front of a camera and I get weird, especially if I know, even at the show when we do Rating the Rock Wall, I'll look over and you'll see on the wall that there's, a shot of us, and I'll look over and I'll go, oh, I don't like the way I look over there.
So you say you get weird in front of a camera, but how do you get in the recording studio when it's record time?
I just shut my eyes off and shut the world out and get right into the song.
Yeah.
One thing that was really interesting that I have a lot of respect for, Barbra Streisand said something that had a lot of impact to me. She says, I will never sing a song that I don't really believe in, mm-hmm. which, I've sang songs where I was paid to do the song, but I really wasn't feeling what I was singing.
Right.
And then I started, as I got older, I understand where she was coming from. Because if that's one thing that I have expressed a lot in some of the, especially ballads, of course, I think that's the favorites of all singers, especially guys that can really sing, really, even rock singers like Steve Perry, Lou Graham, Freddie Mercury, the ballads really show off.
Well, that's actually very interesting. Yes, it shows off the voice, and often it becomes the hit.
Yes, and yes, it does. But because what's happening is they're actually believing what they're singing.
Yes.
Because they're putting it, what Barbara Streisand said in contact with it, you know? I mean, to sing something fast, you know, I mean, Motown people were really good at that.
Uh-huh.
They were really good at singing. The new Motown to me, or R&B, is not anything like the Temptations, the Four Tops, the Supremes. I mean, they were doing songs that had emotion, feeling, but it was what they were feeling at the time.
Mm.
You know, Marvin Gaye's "What's Going On" is what's going on today. You know, it's a complete cycle. I got to fix my battery thing here.
Okay.
I'm running low. There we go. And so, anyways, are we good?
Yep, we're good.
So, anyways, I noticed that when I do certain stuff, and like you said, you know, how do you get behind the mic, you know, and you just kind of close your eyes and get into what you're doing. And what's really interesting is that all these years, singing, just going into the studio, the producers I worked with Jack Douglas, who did the last record with John Lennon, and they dropped him off at the Dakotas and he got shot the same night. He also worked with a lot of the Aerosmith stuff. So I was really gifted to work with some really good producers, and they, until I got in Quiet Riot, I didn't really get with a producer that was really interested in trying to find Paul.
Mm.
Paul didn't find Paul pretty much until I got a studio in my house where I could get behind the mic and spend hours or even days on a song, go back and listen to it and see if I liked the tone, the texture. Sometimes I wouldn't be feeling good and do a song, but the texture of the voice, the feeling was all there, and so, oh, that's a take, you know, because there's two parts of that: having it in your house and being available all the time. You can find yourself looking up your tailpipe, you know, your mind in, trying to, you know, there's a point in time where you got to go, hey, this is a good performance, and that's where somebody else from the outside coming in, you know, because when I did those records in the, you know, Quiet Riot, I got to really spend a lot, the producer spent a lot of time working with me. And it was really weird because he'd go, I would just sing it like that. And I'd go, closer, closer, come a little closer, girls like you don't bite. You know, but he would go, I want you to sing it like, and, you know, to somebody, it would be like, what is he trying to get across? You know, but we connected frequency, you know, everything's on a frequency and a vibration. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
The universe is all about that. And we connected. The other producers I worked with, they went, wow, he's got a great voice. Bring him in here and let him sing. We got 6 or 7 days to finish the record. I got to sing 10 songs in 6 or 7 days.
Yeah.
And then they'd spend all this time on drum sounds, guitar sounds, and, you know.
This is super interesting. So there are a couple things here, just to recap a little bit. The ability to give yourself permission, because you hear me talk about giving permission all the time, right? And often the creative process gets hindered by our idea of performance. We have to execute, and we don't give ourselves permission to actually experiment and be creative and be spontaneous and be alive and allow ourselves to suck once in a while to actually discover something. So it sounds then that you have spent a fair amount of time doing that. Like you said, it's brilliant. Plus then having an outside, someone who can, you know, have an ear or give some suggestions or bring things out of us that we can't do ourselves.
Right.
So,
and there is that connection where somebody can bring the best out in you. And I think too, you try a little harder to impress someone.
Right.
So when you're in the studio and I have to tell you, share a story with you that I was working with, after Quiet Riot, we did our Quiet Riot record. Things didn't work out, so they wanted me to do a solo record. So we started recording stuff. in the studio at Pasha, and we brought in the engineer, and his name's Chris Minto, and he did the Long Run and all the Pat Benatar records, right?
Okay.
So we hire him to come in, and we're doing 4-song demo or EP, whatever.
Yeah.
So I come in, and I've got walking pneumonia, and I've got to sing.
Oh, wow.
So I take this medication, and I'm in there, and I can't find the key. I put the headphones on, and I've never worked with him before, right? And he's going, hey, you know, I worked with the Eagles, and maybe we need to get some throat tea and some Drambuie, because that's what they had on the Long Run, was Drambuie Louie. So they went and bought me a bottle of Drambuie and got me some throat tea. And so I'm in there, and it didn't help anything at all. I was all up here.
Yeah.
I wasn't hearing correctly. Yeah. So anyways, we spent about 5 or 6 hours wasting time in the studio.
Yeah.
So finally, I finally said, you know what? You know, they hit the button and go, you know, let's move on to guitars right now. So I came in the next night, and then he knew I could sing, because he didn't think I could sing.
But now you're still singing like crazy. You're singing Dream On, Dream On, and you're doing it every single freaking night, and you're not 30 anymore.
Well, you know what's interesting is that I was doing a lot of studio work and a lot of records in the studio and stuff, and I stumbled upon your site, Singing with Freedom, because I wanted to better my voice. And I thought maybe I might have been getting lazy in the studio, because what's great about having your own studio, you can record one line at a time and never even sing the whole song. So you hit the record button and you go for the performance. You go for the attitude or the sensitivity or if it's a ballad, you know, you're just trying to, and I'm jotting lyrics down, and maybe this doesn't work or this melody doesn't work, especially if you're doing your own stuff and you're writing it, then you're experimenting, you know. So you find yourself maybe doing 2 or 3 lines of a song that you've written and then move on. And then I found myself, wow, when I went out to do a performance, I wasn't up to snuff. When I was touring, you know, and singing night after night, or even playing the clubs in my early days, when I was doing four 45-minute sets and 15-minute breaks, you know, playing cover songs and stuff, my voice was, it's a difference. You can pace yourself when you have to perform a long period.
Right.
When you go out on the show to do an hour show or a 45-minute show at a big concert, your adrenaline's up and you gotta knock it out of the park when you come out there. There's no pacing yourself. You're boom here, boom there when you come off. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that when I was going out to sing, that, wow, wait a minute, I'm not up to snuff. So then I reached out to you, and I discovered you on Instagram, and I bought the DVDs, and your whole way, I mean, for some reason, your teaching, the way you get to come across and everything, it just really, I connected, you know, and I do it on a regular basis now. I do a 30-minute warm-up that you have on your site, and I've made a CD, and I have it in my car, and I'm on my way to Rock Vault. I'm doing, doesn't it feel good? Yeah.
But first of all, so thank you for that, and thank you for doing it. But I think this is important also, that it's impressive also that you are understanding that the value of your voice. You know, when we're younger, we can always get by with stuff. Perhaps a lot of people
yes.
cannot do what you could do then. 4 45-minute sets, forget about it. Most people can't, right? But you obviously found a way where it was working for you, and you were able to do it, and you were obviously had a very strong instrument, and you've always had. But the fact that you're treating it so well, and I think the reason you connected with that was it wasn't that I was teaching you how to sing. I was teaching you how to become aware of your amazing instrument the way it is.
Absolutely. That's exactly what you did. You actually gave me tools to make it work better.
Yeah.
You know? And also what really transpired, because doing Raiding the Rock Vault, now I'm starting to sing six nights a week.
Yeah.
There's four singers in the show, but it's six nights a week when we first started.
Yes.
And then for a year and a half at the where Elvis is at now it's Westgate, but it was we started performing that show where Elvis used to perform. It was the International Hotel, then it became the Hilton.
Right.
Then the Hilton left, and then it became LVH, Las Vegas Hilton,
right.
Just the letters. And we were there for a year and a half, and then we moved to the Trop.
Yeah,
they sold it to.
And that's where I saw you the first time at the Tropicana.
And we went from 2 hours and 40-minute show at Westgate or LVH to 2 hours at the Tropicana.
Right.
Then when we moved from the Trop to the Hard Rock, it went to 90 minutes. So we dumped a lot of songs. We
in
also,
the same room where I did my event. So I just want to point that out, because I feel very, very cool that that I did my event in the same room that you then later did your show in. So I feel like
I know. And I came to see your event just before we even were there.
That's right. You were at the Tropicana.
Yeah, we were at the Trop. Yeah.
You didn't even know you were going to the Harvard.
No, not at all. And the engineer that engineered you there, Angelo Acuri, was the engineer for the Dio records, the first three Dio records, and also did the Stars, engineered Stars, hit the hearing aid event.
Right.
And he was, when we moved to there as well, he was your sound man when you did your event there. And when we moved into that same room, it's been years since we worked together, and then here he is. He's doing sound.
Oh wow! And I did not realize that. Well, that's awesome.
So
yeah.
Really, it is a small world.
Yeah.
And it gets smaller and smaller, you know. So really, actually,
but now you're at the Rio. So
yes.
People should really go and check it out. I really recommend it. I want to back up. Well, we want to talk a little bit about your international success. People in Japan are still going nuts over you, and you're releasing something in Japan coming up now. But let's go quickly back to the very, very beginning. How did you find your voice or discover that, wow, singing is maybe something for me? How did that come about?
Well, my mother was a singer, and she would, and her whole side of the family was musically inclined. They could play any instrument, you know, and just sing, dance, whatever. A lot of my mother's side of the family did vaudeville, things in vaudeville. My mother was a singer and would sing every day.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of sounded like Patsy Cline or Brenda Lee was another big influence of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so while she'd be making beds, she'd be singing, "You never know how much I love you." And so like 5 or 6 years old, I'm starting to sing these songs, you know, because I'm hearing them all the time. And my dad's side of the family, my grandfather, he had a big voice, and he would sing Italian songs, "Old Solo Mio." And he had a big voice. So I think I got from both sides of my genes. I got gifted with a great texture in my voice.
Yeah.
And
well, you've also been around it a lot. So that's I would consider that training also. It's like when we're surrounded by something, it's like acquiring a language because we're around it and you acquired a skill. So anyway, go on. Yes.
So I didn't have any lessons. I didn't take any vocal lessons until I was probably 16 and playing in a bar. So
okay.
Do you remember the
first time you performed?
Yes. I was 12 years old. I had heard House of the Rising Sun and picked up a guitar. And that was the first song I learned on guitar. Okay. And my mom saw that I was so obsessed with it at 11 or 12 years old, okay, that they got me a guitar. My great uncle worked a pawn shop in Ohio, where I'm originally from, Lima. And so she got a deal on a guitar where the strings were, you know, so far off the fret, it, you know, your fingers got really strong playing it. So that everybody, it was a time, you know, I'm 66, so you go back a long ways. It was a time where, you know, The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel was out, and you had the Animals, the Stones, the Beatles, and everybody wanted to play an instrument and sing. You know, it was that time period, you know. Yeah. And my parents ended up, my mother's family, her parents moved to California. And so my parents had split up. But my first time performing was on a local TV show for kids called The Berry Patch. And we did House of the Rising Sun. And I picked guitar and played. And then there was a bass player and a drummer. And we played on a local TV kiddie show called The Berry
Patch.
That
seems like pretty high pressured situation if you've never performed before.
Absolutely. Wow. But, you know, I was never shy. I was okay. I went to a Catholic school, and the nuns were always all over me. I think I have scoliosis in my back from Sister Mary Judas shaking me in the middle of next year, telling Mr. Shortino, you don't need to entertain, need to learn, you know. So I was always the class clown. So I found out that seeing Elvis, the Beatles, and everything, everybody on Ed Sullivan at such a young age, I said, this is a great way to get girls, you know, and express myself.
Yes.
So that's what motivated me into doing it. And then shortly after that, performance, then we did some cool things. I actually built my own amplifiers because I couldn't afford to buy stuff. And back then, amplifiers were small, even the PAs, you know. I mean, the Beatles performed at Shea Stadium with, you know, Voice of a Theater, yeah, PA, which they drowned it out. The girls were screaming so loud, the crowd drowned it out them. They couldn't even hear themselves.
So you had that dream then, pretty in the young teens.
This is what I want to do. Yeah. I want to sing and perform. A good enough guitar player to be a good guitarist, but good enough to accompany myself.
Okay. Yes.
And then I met a guy in junior high when we moved to California. My parents had split, and so we moved in with my grandparents, and I met a guy at junior high school. So we started a band in California, in Glendale, California, is where my grandparents were. And I was busboying at a place called Dupar's. And my mom started working as a waitress and a barmaid at a place called the Copa. A band called Shanko played there, who did, a song, day after day, the whole place slipping away, you know. Look, California, the whole place slipping away. Where do we go when there's no San Francisco? Anyways, I saw them there. And then
do you know like every song in the history of music?
I try, you know, but what was interesting is my mom was working there. So yeah, we got a drummer that was a little older than us, and I was making $10 a night playing four nights a week.
But you were too young to be in a bar.
Right. So they would tell us to go. We had to be chaperones. So we had to either have a parent there or someone who was of age to be in a bar. Right. And then they walked us into a room. In that same club, I backed up playing bass. I backed up Bobby Day, who did... he rocks in the treetop all the day long. The Platters, the Coasters.
Wow.
They would come in, and I don't know if they were the original ones or not anymore, you know. So, but to make a long story endless, that's how I started playing in clubs and singing on a regular basis. And Ronnie James Dio came out to see.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about your relationship with Ronnie James Dio, then, because I understand he's been a big influence on your career.
Yes, they came and saw the band, and he wanted to get into, you know, producing a young band, and he was doing his first solo record with Warner Brothers and Holy Diver. And so I was one of these guys that I trusted everybody. I didn't take anything to an attorney. So my son's godfather, a guy named Kim Manners, he and this other guy wanted to manage me. So I said, okay. So I signed a contract. They took it to an attorney and they owned everything from me. If I bought a house, they owned part of it, you know. Oh, wow. And I don't think that was something they set up. But when you take something to an attorney, the attorney's going to do the best for the client, right? Not what's best for everybody involved. So anyways, I get involved with the Dios and I'm signed in this management contract. Well, they want to get me out of this contract. Okay. So we work it out. His attorney, Stan Diamond, ends up becoming my attorney. And he was David Bowie's attorney. He did a lot of people. He's probably retired now. An amazing guy. So anyways, I get out of the contract with these guys, and Ronnie and his wife, Wendy, decide we're going to move you in the house. Mm-hmm. We're afraid you're going to sign another contract and sign your life away. And, I was able to meet more rock stars and be exposed to a whole, you know, Glenn Hughes, you know, Carmine, all of these people that I looked up to, and great singers. And here I'm, and then I get in a movie called Spinal Tap, and I'm not even signed. I've been playing a rock star, Duke Fame, and we're not even signed yet to Warner Brothers, right?
And if you haven't seen Spinal Tap, ladies and gentlemen, it's just one of those movies you just have to see. That's just how it is.
It's a cult, and you know what? It follows me around. Yeah, Paul Schaefer's in it. I mean, there's so many people in this movie. Yeah. And it was all ad lib. So I didn't
even
know
us Swedes have all seen Spinal
Tap,
okay?
Yep. It follows me around.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Anytime we have a show and stuff doesn't work, it's a Spinal Tap moment.
You're right. Well, of course. Yeah.
You know,
brilliant.
So. Anyways, but he influenced
you also musically, vocally, or gave.
Actually. He did influence me musically, and vocally he influenced me a lot. He took me into the studio and we did some demos. And the reason our record, Rough Cut's record, would have come out a year sooner than it did. The record company was Ted Templeman, who signed Van Halen signed Rough Cut.
Yeah.
And he was in the middle of recording Eric Clapton and Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac. Yes. They were doing a record together. So anyways, we were waiting for him to, we wanted him to produce the band Rough Cut. So Ronnie had did these demos and finished his album. And it wasn't until a year later, we got a producer that did Judas Priest. And also Def Leppard, the early Def Leppard, Tom Allum. Here I come in and I'm exposed to all of this rock music that I never was exposed to, because I was exposed to all kinds of stuff. My problem as an artist in my early days was that they couldn't figure out. My parents, we built a studio and I'd go in and do demos and stuff and record a whole record. And yeah. Couldn't find out who Paul was.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could sing country, so they tried me in country. I could sing blues, so we did blues. I could sing R&B, so we did some R&B stuff. I could sing rock. Well, the problem with me was that some singers are just limited to singing rock.
Right.
And they can't sing something else. Right. You know?
So that's very interesting, because when you have multiple skills, right, that can become a dilemma, and I get that all the time. It's like, what's my specialty? What's my uniqueness, right? But I also feel that people who try to find what they're unique at actually became very, very narrow, and that uniqueness is not all that amazing, compelling. While someone like you, who has all this, you have a big palette of colors to play with. Yes, it's hard for you to decide which one you're going to go for. But on the other hand, you have a lot of it in your toolbox, and you still haven't figured out who Paul is because you're now recording something new.
But I'm doing a new record now,
and it's a new version of Paul, right? It's still Paul, but it's just a new thing that's coming out, which is part of evolving and creating and being able to do cool stuff. So what's happening right now then?
We're going to release something here very soon. I'm waiting to hear from an email. In fact, I got a WhatsApp at 3 a.m. this morning, and from Japan, which was 9 or so in the next day.
Right. Yes.
And from the producer and co-writer and guitarist of the record, Shortino Make a Wish, is what the record is called. And we did a remake of Send in the Clowns, and it starts out like Sinatra, isn't it, Rich? And then it gets heavy rock and roll. And we just were so fortunate to have Vinnie Paul Abbott from Pantera and a band called Hell Yeah, and he just passed away. But we recorded this about 10 years ago for Carrot Top, who's a performer here in Las Vegas.
Right.
And nothing ever came of it. So the producer of this new record said, let's redo it. And so we brought Marco Mendoza, who's been with Whitesnake, the Dead Daisies, and Marco Mendoza, Viva La Rock. He's out there right now, but a great bass player. Mm. So he put some really melodic stuff on there. There's Doug Aldridge from Whitesnake that's on one track. Jay Schellen, who is, a lot of these people are in Raiding the Rock Vault as well. Mm-hmm. Jay Schellen is been out with Yes in Asia, and he played drums on 6 tracks. Phil Susan played with Ozzy and also with Billy Idol, and he played 6 tracks with the drummer Jay, and they're also in Raiding the Rock Vault. And then there's Rowan Robinson, who was with Dio. And I did a song called Eyes of a Wizard on here that is a dedication to Ronnie. And so he did a little guitar work with Nozomu, the producer and the guitarist from Japan. Mm. And it's going to be on Ward Records. It will be licensed out. We're working a deal with Europe. Mm-hmm. So it'll be released in Europe. And then figuring out how we're going to do some videos, because we're going to do a video and have Carrot Top in it and Send in the Clowns. And then Make a Wish is just a really great ballad. And it has a great positive positive solution for life.
Make a Wish. Fantastic. This is so exciting. So, Paul, I know you have to go now because you actually have to go and raid the rock vault.
Yes, I have.
And what are you going to do first? You're going to warm up your voice? Yes, no? Yes.
I'm going to go and I am going to warm up my voice with your warm-ups. And then I'm going to, we added some new songs to the show.
Oh.
So we swapped some songs out. But it's a great show. It's been number one for the last 7 years.
I've got to come out and check it out now again. It's been a while. But hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pierre.
It's so cool to get deeper insights into who you are and where you're coming from and what you're doing. And it's wonderful. I wish you all the best, and hope people have enjoyed this and be inspired and get a little rock history lessons.
And
here
please
also
have them check out my Paul Shortino on Facebook. Twitter, Paul Shortino, and also www.paulshortino.com. And a lot of stuff going on, and there's all kinds of stuff that got quite a few solo records out there that Shortino, It's About Time. It took a long time. That's why we called it that. So I've got some great songs on there, too, and some blues records that I've done and stuff, just solo stuff. So please, if you want to check out some of my stuff, please feel free. And also doing a new thing with Carlos Cavazo from Quiet Riot called Rough Riot.
Right.
So it's part of Rough Cut and Quiet Riot. So we put it together. And so we're working on some new material. So keep your eyes open for that. There's some social media for Rough Riot as well.
Yes.
And always stay tuned with this guy right here and all my fans out there. This, if you really want to get in touch with yourself and who you are, you really, you're really great at bringing that out in people, Pierre. I really want to, I want to thank you very much for inspiring me to really want to better myself. And I thank you very much. And that is from the bottom of my heart. And it is true. You have inspired me to be a better singer, to work harder at my craft, to relax more about it, to feel more confident. It all goes hand in hand. And thank you very, very much. And wow. I tell everybody to check you out, because you connect with people. You really do. You have God has given you a gift as a great teacher and someone to. Make you you make people a better person as well. You know, I mean, you connect on spiritual levels as well as other levels that we've been talking about. Your craft, your voice. You have a great speaking voice, and you have a great singing voice. Then we have to do something together. Is what'd be really cool. Because we do a ballad together.
I'm really touched by what you said here. I really thank you so much. And of course, this is what we want to do. We want to help and inspire people and do our best, whatever it is that we
can. And you do a great job at that. I really mean it. I've seen you. I've followed you, and I see you in all different parts of the world helping others. That's what we're here for. We're here to help others, help others, help others.
Right.
When people go, "Why am I here?" Well, you're here to help somebody else.
That's right. That's right. Paul, you're amazing. I appreciate you. And we'll be in touch. I'll come and watch your show soon. And
be in Los Angeles soon, and I'll come and see you.
There you go. And have an awesome show tonight, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank
God
you.
God bless you, Pierre.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for have watched, you who have watched this, you have listened to this, really appreciate it. And go out there and express who you are.